For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. This podcast is recorded and produced on the lands of the Djabal and Djerriwarr peoples. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, their elders past, present and emerging.
The average Australian will live for 11 years at the end of their life with pain and suffering from a group of diseases that we know how to prevent. These are diseases that are a failure of politics, not science. It's a political issue, not a technical issue. We know what to do, we're just simply not doing it.
Dr. Sandro De Meo is Chief Executive Officer of Vic Health and an expert on chronic disease and public health. Recently, Sandro wrote an article for Insight Plus about the design of any future National Centre for Disease Control. I caught up with him today to talk further about the importance of such an agency and the way it should be put together. Why do you think we need a National Centre for Disease Control?
We're one of the only OECD countries without a Centres for Disease Control. And I think if we reflect on the last few years, Australians have been incredible throughout this pandemic. I think we've stuck together. We've made some really tough calls, and it has come at a cost. Saving countless lives has come at a cost, but we've done very well. And we need to now be thinking about learning the lessons from the last few years and preparing for the next pandemic, because it will come. It's a matter of, you know, when, not if. And one key lesson from the last few years was the importance of national leadership, a clear national voice, evidence-based, that could provide assurance based on what we know in the science, with independence from government, and provide, I suppose, a way forward for Australians. And it's the same when it comes to not just infectious diseases and novel viruses, but also the pandemic of chronic disease that we've been living with now for more than three decades. Government committed, the current government, when they were in opposition, committed to establishing a CDC if they won the election, and they did, and now they're on track to deliver on that promise.
What are you hearing from them in terms of when it's going to happen?
I think it's going to happen fairly quickly because of the lessons, the hard-learned lessons of the last few years, and also the expectation among Australians that it will happen. So I think it'll happen quite quickly. There's a consultation process happening at the moment. In the interim budget, there is funding for that consultation process only, but I think we can expect to see some movement in terms of establishing a CDC in the next year or two. The question is what it looks like, what it covers, and what governance it has.
I mean, we're doing pretty well, aren't we, without a CDC?
Well, it depends on how you sort of define well. So if we put the pandemic aside for a moment and we look at chronic disease, and I always say, Kate, two things. First of all, this was a pandemic of inequity. It showed up in an infectious disease, but ultimately was born from, propelled by, and only solved through addressing deep intergenerational cracks of inequity that we have allowed to fester and grow across society. We need to really take this moment to look long and hard at the type of society that we want and ensure that we invest in the health of populations and make sure that everyone gets a fair go when it comes to their health. I always say the single best way to prepare for the next pandemic is to invest in the long-term health of the population,
yeah,
and decrease health inequities that have been growing insidiously over the last few decades. So if you look at the health of the nation at the moment, despite a world-class healthcare system, one in two Australians live with chronic disease. Most Australians live with multiple chronic conditions, and the average Australian will live for 11 years at the end of their life with pain and suffering from a group of diseases that we know how to prevent.
Yeah.
These are diseases that are a failure of politics, not science. It's a political issue, not a technical issue. We know what to do, we're just simply not doing it. The way I know that is because other countries are. You look at what's going on in Latin America or Northern Europe. They're putting policies in place, largely social policies, across all parts of government and seeing significant decreases in chronic disease and improvements in the quality of life. And again, when we know that the single strongest modifiable risk factor for poorer outcomes and even death from COVID was your, you know, whether you have a chronic disease or not, and particularly whether you are living with overweight and obesity. We need to do better for Australians as we prepare for the next pandemic, and that needs to include a CDC that's squarely focused on chronic disease.
So what does that look like in practical terms?
Well, look, I think it's really important we don't get into arguments about kind of where it is. So I think let's just put it in Canberra and move on. Yeah. It's the nation's capital.
Yeah.
I think it shouldn't be too big. We don't need another big bureaucracy. And actually, its agility would be one of its strengths, its ability to be able to move quickly and outpace the next novel virus. I think it needs to be sufficiently resourced, though, that it can, enough budget that it can co-fund things with the states, that it can test and iterate things, and particularly find pockets of innovation that do exist across Australia, because communities often hold the answers to most of these big questions. Find those and help to iterate, improve, evaluate, and then ultimately when they're ready, when it's time to scale, have a voice directly into the Australian Parliament, not just, I think, the Health Minister or Cabinet. It needs to be the full Parliament to be able to table recommendations and solutions. I think it needs to have a core role in implementing the preventative health strategy. It's currently an orphan with no parents, and I think that there's a good opportunity for the CDC to set targets, track those targets. But to do that, it needs to be independent. So it needs to be an independent agency governed by a board that I think should have lived experience and strong technical expertise on that board. It should be run independently, and it should be protected by a piece of legislation. And as I've already mentioned, I strongly believe that you can't do infectious disease without also having a mandate focused on chronic disease. It is simply, it doesn't make any sense. They are two sides of the same coin. And in fact, as we saw in the pandemic, if you don't get on top of chronic disease, we will be in a world of pain again when the next pandemic arrives.
Long COVID seems to be creating chronic diseases as well as that. But anyway, that's a whole
other. Well, absolutely. And again, I think that's a great example. So the relationship is multi kind of directional. So yeah. We know that heart disease, diabetes were major contributors of risk for poorer outcomes, for ICU admission and for death from COVID. If we had put things in place 10 years ago to address the burden of chronic disease like many other countries have, we may well have done better in the pandemic. At the same time, the pandemic, the virus itself, as you say, increases your risk of stroke, of heart disease, of a number of other chronic conditions, including obviously its relationship, significant relationship with mental illness and mental health. Again, you can't do one without the other. And you know, one concern I do have is that the government may decide to do one, let's start with infectious disease, because that's the part that we're all thinking about at the moment, but not see the bigger picture that actually fundamentally the two are deeply linked. And this was a pandemic of health inequity, not just of a novel virus.
I'm chatting today with Dr. Sandro De Maio, the CEO of Vic Health, about the possibility of a National Centre for Disease Control. Sandro's Insight article on the design of the CDC can be found at insightplus.mja.com.au, and the full link is in the show notes of this podcast. Don't forget you can find all our previous episodes at mja.com.au/podcasts. And you can guarantee you won't miss any upcoming episodes by searching for Medical Journal of Australia at your favourite podcast platform and hitting the subscribe button. Back to our chat with Sandro. You've talked about it being independent. It's one thing to be independent. How do we make it be listened to and acted on?
That's a really good question, because I do think we need a single source of truth. Let's put ourselves in the situation of a future health emergency or pandemic, or even the confusion, the continued confusion around what we do to address this huge burden on so many Australians of chronic disease that's playing out in our healthcare system right now in many states. How do we make sure that the CDC is listened to? Firstly, I think being an independent national agency will go a long way. So it's not influenced by politics or
economics,
government of the day. And absolutely, it's, you know, the wider political economy. The second is that it needs to have sufficient resources to be able to, you know, to have really good people running this agency, working with other agencies, working across government. It needs to be able to access and talk to any parliamentarian, any part of cabinet, all departments across the federal government. Health is in all, should be in all policies. This is a great opportunity to accelerate that. It does need to also then have a reporting mechanism or a way to table recommendations directly into Parliament so that it can't get lost in a shelf or a drawer somewhere, particularly on issues that are tricky. Sometimes health issues are tricky and uncomfortable for governments, but that can also be an enormous opportunity for governments. If you've got an agency that can say some of the tough things, that can be quite helpful. And you know, that's for the future agency leadership to deliver its role with that level of nuance and insight. And I think the last is a key role in actually tracking and reporting on the nation's health. So where are our national metrics are being collected by agencies, but I think aggregating them, interpreting them, and then reporting back to the nation on those each year, being really clear on where we're doing well and where government needs to step up more strongly, I think that will make it a robust organisation.
Those agencies that already exist, is there an opportunity to use those as the foundations to build on that, to create a CDC?
Well, certainly, I think a future CDC needs to work sort of as a network, a node within a network of other nodes, but it does need to have a clear curating and coordinating and leadership role across infectious and chronic disease domains. I think it will be welcomed by many agencies, including ours. If you look at some of the big challenges we're facing at the moment as a country from a health perspective, I think we would benefit really strongly. And I'm a CEO of a health promotion agency in the state of Victoria. I think there's a lot that the CDC can learn from the VicHealth model. We were the first in the world back in the late 80s to tax tobacco and use that, through hypothecation to fund an independent agency. We have a board with parliamentarians and representatives, a similar model to what I would suggest for the CDC. We run more like a business, really, at the end of the day, than a large government organisation. Again, I would suggest a similar approach, efficient and effective, as many government agencies are, of course, as well, for the CDC. But, I think there is an opportunity. And when I speak to other agencies like ours, there's a real appetite for stronger national, independent, expert, protected leadership in many of the spaces we work. I wouldn't see it as competition or duplication. I think that it's a really important missing piece of the Australian health architecture puzzle.
The US CDC has copped some fair criticism during the pandemic for not being as strong as it could have been and to caving in a little bit to some political pressures. How do we stop that happening? Is that a model we need to base ours on, or do we need to go full Aussie?
Well, I do like going full Aussie, but look, I think there are definitely some lessons from the US that we should learn from. Let's not replicate, let's leapfrog and be best in class, and that's the opportunity here. So I think the criticisms, and I don't want to comment on other countries' governments, but I think some of the criticisms that I've heard have been that, they weren't as independent, or they weren't able to say some of the more difficult things, or there was a perception of interference from government. I think the lessons for Australia would be, again, the governance is going to be really important. So have it as an independent agency, protect it through a piece of legislation so it's enduring, allow it to speak across government and report into Parliament, not just cabinet or the minister. Have the leadership appointed by a board, an independent board, and have the independent board appointed by government. And it's very similar to, again, our organisation here, Kate, VicHealth. I'm appointed by the minister, my chair is as well, but ultimately the board and the CEO and myself and my executive, we run independently once we're appointed. And that's really critical. And your appointment needs to be independent of government cycles. So once you're appointed, you're appointed. What we see in the US is that with a change of president, usually comes a change of leadership in the CDC. Yeah. I think we want to avoid that type of scenario in Australia, and there's certainly ways that we can do that. But, other countries around the world, including the Nordic states, have very strong CDC models. We can learn from. And that's the opportunity. You know, we're the last one to the table,
yep.
Which is not something to be totally proud of.
No, but we can cherry pick.
It does certainly allow us to at least learn from everyone else's mistakes, which yes. and strengths, which is something we should absolutely do.
Should it have public health powers?
Look, I mean, I think my feeling is no. I think we have those mechanisms that already exist. I think the missing value is really more in the synthesis of evidence, the independence of that evidence at the federal level, of being yeah. able to provide a voice, you know, in a time of a clear voice in a time of crisis and make recommendations. But I think ultimately the decision making at scale should probably rest with government. But I really think that, you know, at the end of the day, that's probably a decision that's a little bit outside my yeah. my remit, but they're my, you know, they'd be my reflections. Yeah. Ultimately, at the end of the day, we have an elected government that makes decisions for the nation. I don't think, you know, a CDC is not in that domain.
No.
The role of the CDC is really to provide independent expert insights and advice, coordination, and a voice of advice to the Australian public directly as well. I think, you know, one of the deeply concerning trends of the pandemic was the emergence of misinformation
yeah.
and the panic and fear that that caused. I do think that we need to heed the lesson that a stronger, more coordinated, expert, independent national voice could have been, a very helpful addition to the Australian pandemic response. This is the opportunity. We looked at some data from another state on why we're seeing such significant stresses on the healthcare systems.
Hmm.
And when you look back 10 years, the change is not change in the age of populations. It's marginal. It's
yeah.
not change in genetics of the population. There's no change. The big difference is the incredible rise in comorbidities. The fact that so many Australians are now struggling through life with 2, 3, 4 chronic conditions. And it means that when you do become unwell, you become really unwell and you're in hospital for longer and it's more complicated and it's more costly. Even there's a role for the CDC to be
yeah.
calling these things out, to be really holding governments closer account, to be showing what's effective and cost effective, and then tracking whether we do it and the progress we're making from it. I think it's a perfect example of why actually we really do need a federal CDC.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts, or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.